The loyal soldier believes that you're still in danger. That there's snipers out there in society. You might sleep with one. You probably do. You got to keep yourself in line. You got to tone yourself down. Because you're going to get criticized by someone else and it's going to really hurt. You're going to get rejected. You're going to be abandoned yet again. So you better find a way to be pleasing. Codependency is not all bad, the loyal soldier says. And when you were a child, when we were children, we needed that. And it would have been much worse for us if we didn't have that. And by the way, there's all kinds of our aspects of our wholeness that, as we just spoke about, end up in the shadow. How did it get in the shadow? Well, it's the guy with a shovel. Who's the guy with the shovel? A loyal soldier is shoveling parts of your wholeness into that repository in the West to keep you safe. And the loyal soldier doesn't even know there'll ever be a time to take that stuff out. Because the loyal soldier is a kid. And the loyal soldier says it hurts to be rejected and abandoned and yelled at and made fun of. And I'll show you, the loyal soldier says, the way to go through life and be pleasing enough to others. Here's a couple poems. This one's Robert Bly, titled One Source of Bad Information. And this is kind of an East approach of the self, the East self approach to the subpersonality North. Loyal soldier. He says, there's a boy in you about 3 years old who hasn't learned a thing for 30,000 years. Sometimes it's a girl. This child had to make up its mind how to save you from death. He said things like, stay home. Avoid elevators. Eat only elk. You live with this child, but you don't know it. You're in the office, yes, but live with this boy at night. He's uninformed, but he does want to save your life. And he has. Because of this boy, you survived a lot. He's got 6 big ideas. 5 don't work. Right now, he's repeating them to you. There's Robert Bly on The Loyal Soldier. Now, as a psychologist, some of the best psychology I've come across is from the poets. And I recently discovered that Freud said that. Way back, early in his career, or maybe in the middle of his career, he said, wherever I go, I find the poets have gotten there before me. It's been so true for me. That's how I got into poetry. I noticed they did psychology way better than psychologists. One source of bad information. Okay, here's another great psychologist named David White. Just kidding, you know he's a poet. But I wasn't kidding. This is called Fire, The Fire in the Song. The mouth opens and fills the air with its vibrant shape. The mouth opens and fills the air with its vibrant shape until the air and the mouth become one shape. The mouth opens and fills the air with its vibrant shape until the air and the mouth become one shape. And the first word, your own word, spoken from that fire, surprises, burns, grieves you now because you made that pact with a dark presence in your life. The mouth opens and fills the air with its vibrant shape, and the air and the mouth become one shape. And the first word, your own word, spoken from that fire, surprises, burns, grieves you now because you made that pact with a dark presence in your life. He said, if you only stop singing, I'll make you safe. If you only stop singing, I'll make you safe. And he repeated the line, knowing you would hear, I'll make you safe, like the comforting sound of a door closed on the fear at last. And he repeated the line, knowing you would hear, I'll make you safe, like the comforting sound of a door closed on the fear at last. But his darkness crept under your tongue and became, his darkness became the dim cave where you sheltered and you grew. In that small place, too frightened to remember the songs of the world, its impossible notes, and the sweet joy that flew out the door of your wild mouth as you spoke. You sheltered and you grew in that small place, too frightened to remember the songs of the world, the impossible notes, its impossible notes, and the sweet joy that flew out the door of your wild mouth as you spoke. So that beginning part of the poem is the wild child, the wild self, the wild mouth. This mouth opens and fills the ear with its vibrant shape, and the ear and the mouth become one shape. And in some ways we're trying to get back there. That's part of individuation, where we can fully claim our own voice again. And that means we have to break the promise we made with the loyal soldier, which was, if you'll only stop singing, I'll make you safe.
So you kind of, I kind of see a connection like between like Santa Claus, you get a payoff if you're good, and you're not doing anything bad, you get the present.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the loyal soldier's like Santa Claus.
Very good. I hadn't seen that before, but absolutely, I'd say yes. The loyal soldier is a projected social archetype of the loyal soldier dressed all in fuzzy white beard and red clothing. He's other things too, but there's that aspect to it, huh? Our parents use it that way. Naughty or nice.
So in response, do you embrace danger or do you reject as untrue that you will be saved? Or do you do both?
Great question. Another 2 hours. What am I going to do here? Part of this is explained in your exercise to be done before bed tonight, which is called the Loyal Soldier exercise. But let me tell you briefly, answer that question. Oh boy, the big question is whether the war is over.
Can we repeat the question?
His question. What do you do about it? What do you do about having loyal soldiers? Do you embrace danger or
reject the promise of safety?
Or do you reject safety? The short answer is you reject safety. If the war is over. That's why I started with that. The question is the war over? The war over means this. The war is over for you personally if the following is true. I'll do first person. The war is over for me when the following is true. If I can do my best, if I choose to do my best to be as magnificent as I can be, to bring my gift into the world, and in doing that, people laugh at me, they go to sleep, they ridicule me, they put me in jail, they threaten me, if any of those, quote, bad things happen, I'll survive. I know how to take care of myself. And I know how to take care of myself because I have two sets of resources, too. One set are the so-called inner ones. I know how to soothe myself. I know how to be a nurturing parent to my own child who's hurt because someone didn't like what I said. I know how to feel my feelings. I know how to let my body have my feelings. I know how to do West work with things, terrible things that happen. I know how to possibly approach my own sacred wound. I have all these inner resources if the war's over. And I also have the second set, which are outer resources. I have people I really trust. I know I can really trust. people who will hold me emotionally and physically when I can't do it for myself. Maybe a really good therapist. I have a really good therapist. Or maybe I have an elder, a true elder in my life, or an initiation guide, etc. All these other, a men's group to go to, you know, whatever it is. So if I have enough inner and outer resources that if the worst possible thing imagined, psychological thing happens, I'll be okay. It won't kill me. I won't kill myself. I won't be institutionalized. I won't get a prescription for Haldol. Or maybe I will, but I won't take it. That's the war's over. Okay? So if the war's not over, you want to find a good therapist, which is challenging, especially with managed care. Now, we don't graduate good therapists anymore because there's no money in it. No survival even in it. Better not get on that soapbox, huh? So, but if the war is over, then the job is there's basic loyal soldier work, and then there's advanced. The basic loyal soldier work is you welcome home your loyal soldiers with love. You never try to get rid of them. You never argue with them. You never tell them they're wrong. I'm talking to, you know what I'm talking about? The voices in you that say, hey, you're a guy, don't be caught having feelings in public, or whatever your loyal soldier says. Eat only elk, whatever it is. You don't argue. You never, ever argue with your loyal soldier. I mean, that guy has been keeping you safe for 10, 20, 50, 160, whatever years, and he loves you. And he did brilliant things when you were 3 years old, and he did brilliant things when he was eight, and he did brilliant things last week, probably, if the war wasn't over. Brilliant. And we have to get to the place where we love our loyal soldiers. With tears streaming down our face. Oh, thank you. My God, were you brilliant. You were there for me when no one else was. And you kept me safe by keeping me small, and the alternative was so much worse. You know, you want to be able to have tears of gratitude and your thank you to your loyal soldiers, because they really did save your life, as Robert Bly says. So the basic work with loyal soldiers is, first you have to identify them, and you identify them by their use of childhood survival strategies. When you realize that a CSS, a childhood survival strategy, has just occurred, you don't go, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed, maybe I can get some surgery and cut that thing out. You turn around to yourself, and maybe even image or draw or fashion in clay your loyal soldier, and you just love him. You say, thank you so much. That was brilliant. Because if the same thing had happened when I was seven and you hadn't done the same thing you just did a minute ago to keep me safe, well, this is what happened. This particular person who lived down the block would have done this. My mother would have done that. My grand aunt, great aunt would have done this. I would have been shamed, etc., and so on. So that's the basic loyal soldier work. The advanced loyal soldier work is what you said. The advanced loyal soldier work is you take a look at it. What is it exactly that your loyal soldiers now today are trying to keep you safe from? He used some kind of survival strategy to keep you safe from something in particular. What was it? He was trying to keep you from saying or doing something that would have been risky. What was it?
Death.
Death?
Rejection by your parents. Making a fool of
yourself. Make a fool of yourself?
Ego damage.
What?
Ego damage.
Yeah. Ego damage.
Success.
Success. Yeah. So advanced loyal soldier work is you do exactly what he was keeping you safe, and you do it in spades. What he was trying to keep you safe from. You do it in spades. That's advanced. It's risky. I will deny all queries about whether I ever suggested that to you. That's advanced. That's advanced work, and that's soul work to do that. And you know you're going to be embarrassed and humiliated if you do it. And if you remember, David White told you when he was here that once you find what your true gift is in life, your true conversation with the world, you need to go out there and do it. And you need to do it arrogantly, he says. I would prefer the word boldly myself. Do it boldly. He says arrogant, because that's just part of his shadow. He owns his arrogance. And he says, and what will happen for the world to help you is the world will humiliate you. That's the deal. You're arrogant, the world humiliates you, you learn from both of them. If the war is over. The humiliation helps you shape your embodiment of your gift. But if you're afraid of getting humiliated, there's the loyal soldier keeping you from really doing anything courageous at all, anything creative, deeply creative. It's noon. Okay, I better move on here. Okay, this will be brief because it's the East and I'm being very West, I don't understand the East anyway, so that is convenient. This is the escapist and the addict. Or the way other people will see you is the bliss head or the puer or puella. That's the puer eternus. There's a guy there with a black t-shirt kind of laughing about that. Never mind. Okay. So you all know, anybody need to know what the puer is? Yeah, the puer, it's Latin for the eternal boy. Puella eternus is the eternal girl. What's his name? Lee, last name Lee, wrote a book, The Flying Boy. John Lee, The Flying Boy. So the escapist in the attic keeps us safe by keeping us flying above all the difficulties of life, the responsibilities of life, the dark, deep west of life. The romance of life that will lead to ego death. The soul calling to us. That was the end of our old way of belonging to the world if we say yes. So the escapists and the addicts, which often take spiritual form, are there to keep us safe from our destiny. So for example, one of my spiritual teachers, Rinpoche, Chogyam Trungpa, Buddhist, Tibetan Buddhist teacher, I studied with him in the 70s. He wrote a book that's pretty well known, maybe many of you have read it, called Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism. That's what he's talking about, cutting through spiritual materialism. He's, his topic there was avoiding this immature East, which is not has no deep spirituality at all. And among other things, he'd say meditation can be used as an escape. It's an escape from difficult emotions, the call of the soul. So a lot of things that look spiritual are can be, or religious, can be escapes from the mysterious dark depths of our life, our soul. It can be an escape from doing something, being a responsible adult in the world. For example, bliss heads, among other things, are the kinds of people who will say, oh, yeah, yeah, I know there's some really terrible things in the world, but I'm working on the inner planes. You know, I'm doing my meditation, and we do our chanting, and we put out love into the world as best we can, and that's all you really can do, you know. There's nothing that needs to happen on the ground. We'll just work on the inner planes. Okay, now some people are projecting on me that you haven't yet, right? I think that's blisshead. It's not responsible. It's not mature. It's airy fairy fantasies. People who bury crystals in the ground, sleep under pyramids all the time. That's all they do. New age blissheads. Great danger to the world. Rather have a veteran as a friend. With that? Town right now. So here's a couple of poems. Okay, here's one. This is by a man named Jay Leeming, Lweming. I know nothing about him, and this is the only poem of his I know. I just love it. Trying to get rid of your ego is like trying to get rid of your garbage can. No one believes you're serious. The more you shout at the garbage man, the more your neighbors remember your name. Anybody need that a second time? Any escapists out there? Hear that a second time? Yeah? Oh, okay. Trying to get rid of your ego is like trying to get rid of your garbage can. No one believes you're serious. The more you shout at the garbage man, the more your neighbors remember your name. Okay, well, let's admit it. Partly depends on what you mean by ego. But if you mean the part of the human psyche that is conscious, you can't get rid of the ego and be human. The most enlightened master has an ego. It's just a very mature one. The goal is to mature and deepen the ego, not get rid of it, if we mean the conscious self by ego. Okay, here's another one. This is by Donna Markova. And there's a really, I think, an interesting story behind this poem. And that is, she didn't write it. Her muse wrote this poem. And the muse wrote the poem after she got in bed on the evening her father died. And she had spent the evening with her father in the hospital. And as her father was slipping away from this life, she realized to her tremendous grief that her father had never really lived his life. He had never really lived anything close to a full human life. That he just was on this single track and it was very limited. Just evokes great grief for her. And she went home that night and she went in bed, got in bed and turned out the light. And then half an hour later or something, sometime later, these words started screaming to her in her ear. She turned on the light and she grabbed her journal, she said, and she took her pen and the pen wrote these words. She had nothing to do with it. She just wrote it. Here it is. I will not die an unlived life. I will not die an unlived life. I will not live in fear of falling or catching fire. I will not live in fear of falling or catching fire. I choose to inhabit my days, to allow my living to open me, to make me less afraid, more accessible, to loosen my heart and until it becomes a wing. I will not live in fear of falling. Until it becomes a wing, a torch, I will not live in fear of catching fire. To loosen my heart until it becomes a wing, a torch, a promise. I choose to risk my significance. To live so that which came to me as seed goes to the next as blossom, and that which came to me as blossom goes on as fruit. Go through that again, but here the idea is that I'm not going to try to escape my life like my father did, she says. Whether he knew it or not, he probably didn't know it, but he escaped his life. He didn't really live his life. So that's why I'm reading this poem now. It's called Response to the Escapist. I will not die an unlived life. I will not live in fear of falling or catching fire. I choose to inhabit my days, to allow my living to open me, to make me less afraid, more accessible. You can hear the nurturing parent speaking to the escapist. To loosen my heart until it becomes a wing, a torch, a promise. I choose to risk my significance. To live so that which came to me as seed goes to the next as blossom, and that which came to me as blossom goes on as fruit. Any questions about that? Because we probably should
title again, please.
I will not die an unlived life. Donna, D-A-W-N-A, Markova. It's in her book. That's M-A-R-K-O-V-A. It's in her book by that title. I will not die an unlived life.
So it seems like we get our some of our loyal soldier from our parents.
Yes. Yeah, we pass it on to our children. Hopefully not our parents pass it on to us, but we won't pass it on to our children.
Who do you think that they should be, have their wings split, or they should find a mentor to empower them?
Yeah, they need an initiation guide who brings them down to Earth and then beyond that into the underworld. But you're talking about them as a personality type. If you're talking about a sub-personality, then what we need to do is embrace our escapist sub-personality from the place of the self. Speak to that. In fact, let me tell you briefly, one exercise you can do, this is many kinds of exercises, any time in your life, is that when you know you have sub-personalities acting up, any one of the four kinds, you can go out on the land and create a four-direction circle. Maybe just with pine cones or four rocks. If you want, you can have eight pine cones or eight rocks. And you can, then you become aware of, well, this is why you did it. You have one sub-personality, let's say it's an escapist who's been really active in your life. It doesn't have to be a chemical dependency. It can be any kind of addiction, including the biggest one, which is our addiction to Western civilization and consuming. Like, okay, short soapbox here. There's so much of us who are trying to make the world a better world, but we're trying to have the same consumer lifestyle without as many downsides. There's nothing deep about that, and it's almost definitely not even possible. Like, if we just recycle enough, we can go on shopping at Walmart. It's not going to work. There's the escapist who's addicted to Western civilization. I want to be able to keep having this kind of lifestyle and drive my Prius, whatever it is, to work an hour every day. I have a Prius, now I can do it. Even though the latest reports say there's more environmental damage done to the world by a Prius manufacturer than by a Hummer, including the gas differences. A Hummer will at least go 300,000 miles, a Prius will go 100,000. And the nickel it takes to create the battery for the Prius creates all kinds of environmental damage. Toyota is not going to tell you that. Okay, that's just one example. I think owning a Prius is great. But that's just one example of how we're thinking, okay, the world's going to be better because I bought a Prius. And I can still have exactly the same lifestyle. And say, okay. Pardon?
Let's go get 55 miles to a gallon.
It gets 55 miles to a gallon. But I'll send you that report if you ask me for it that shows the environmental damage of a Hummer is less. Okay. If you add up all the costs, manufacture and so on. So, you might be wanting to deal with your addiction to Western civilization, as I try to do myself. And there's your escapist. And what do? You hang out on that circle on the land with... from the place of the self. Any one of those four outer places or all four of them, and you can speak to your escapist and find out what happens. Okay, we better stop. I want to thank you for hanging in here with me.